All right, so we are in week number two of our series called Blinded by Faith. And if you missed it last week, make sure to go get caught up. You can do that by visiting our website, theproject.church, and you can listen to those past messages. Carrie spoke to us last week and introduced this concept of this series, but I just kind of wanted to give you a brief overview before we got started today of what this series is really about. So she kind of introduced this idea that as believers, we're kind of expected to have what's called blind faith. And this is often seen as like the main area of Christian belief. And it's kind of wrapped up in this connotation that you're supposed to have blind faith without any kind of connotation or unwarranted or logical foundation. Like, you don't have to have some sort of logical foundation in order to believe or to have faith. You just have faith, right? And so this idea of blind faith is something that as Christians, a lot of times, we don't even really think about it. Sometimes people come along and they challenge our faith and they say something to us and they're like, well, how do you know God's real? And we're like, because I do, right? Like, it's just, that's our answer. And there's nothing wrong with that. But through this series, what we want to show you is that your faith or your beliefs don't necessarily have to be blind. They don't have to have blind faith. You can have logical faith. You can have real faith that's rooted in knowledge, that's rooted in wisdom. And so we really want to take you down this journey of making sense of your faith, making sense of what it means to have backing behind your faith. And one thing that Carrie said last week that I really liked was, we're not going to give you the answers to everything. It's impossible, right? Like, we could do a message series for the next 10 years and learn and grow together just around this idea of blinded by faith, because there's a lot of things that sometimes are just unexplainable, right? They're just unexplainable. But there's a lot of things that if you really think about it, when you think about the way that the science works and you think about the way that these things go together, science and faith actually maybe work together sometimes. And so that's kind of what we want to talk about today, is the idea of science and faith. Colossians 2:8 says this, "A well-reasoned faith stands a better chance of enduring disturbances and overcoming challenges." A well-reasoned faith stands a better chance. Why do you think that is? Yeah, why? Good. Yeah. Yeah, so you have, if you have a well-reasoned faith, you have something to stand on. So the first time someone comes along, maybe it's a college professor, or maybe you're in college and it's one of your good friends that you just met, and they come along and they challenge your faith, then if you have something to stand on, if you have that firm foundation built up, then a lot of times you have a way to defend your faith rather than losing your faith. And so it's really important for us as believers to have that well-reasoned faith. And like I said, we're not going to be able to teach you all of that through this message series. But my hope and my prayer is that we maybe pique that curiosity for you so that you can begin to go out and make that case for yourself. So the scientific revolution and the Age of Enlightenment was kind of a period of time when people kind of just decided, it's like they woke up one day and they were like, I'm not okay with everything just being unexplainable, right? Like, I'm not okay with the answer that, we don't know, right? They woke up and they're like, no, like, all of these things have to have an explanation. All of these things that occur in the world, they have to have an explanation. So during this time, there were many discoveries and advancements in the practice of medicine, mathematics, physics, the development of biological taxonomy, magnetism, electricity, creation of chemistry as a discipline was created during this time. It was a period of time when science made significant leaps forward, and people began to question their faith like never before, because at that point in time, whenever something was unexplainable, they just kind of defaulted and said, well, because God did it, or because God made it, or because God did this, or, you know, God created the whatever. And so, like, all of a sudden, as they're making these discoveries, then it's kind of taking that mysticism or this enchantment away from faith. And Max Webster put it this way. He said, the fate of our times is characterized by the rationalization, the intellectization, and above all, the disenchantment of the world. In other words, if people feel like they have to disprove or justify or explain why things happen, they're not just satisfied with the status quo anymore. And so we actually see this happening in Scripture. And as I was thinking about this message and I was thinking about people being challenged in their faith, I thought about this example that happens between Aaron and Moses and Pharaoh as these plagues are coming on in Egypt. And so let's look at Exodus chapter 7, verses 10 through 12 real quick. It says, so Moses and Aaron went to Pharaoh and did what the Lord had commanded them to do. So let me set this up for you real quick. Moses is going to Pharaoh, and he's telling Pharaoh, hey, you need to let my people go, because my God's about to do some stuff that you don't want to take part in, right? And Pharaoh doesn't believe him. He's like, your God's not real. He's, you know, I just don't believe your God. And so Pharaoh is challenging Moses and Aaron and God. And so at that point in time, Pharaoh's like, hey, prove it to me. Like, prove to me that your God is real and that he's better than my God's. Prove it. If you can prove it, I'll let your people go, right? And so Moses and Aaron, in the scripture, they go to Pharaoh and they do what the Lord commanded them to do. So Aaron has this staff. So he throws down the staff before Pharaoh and Pharaoh's officials, and it becomes a serpent. Then Pharaoh called down his own wise men and sorcerers, and these Egyptian magicians did the same thing with their magic. They threw down their staffs, which also became serpents. But then Aaron's staff swallowed up their staffs. So Pharaoh needed proof that God was real. So he asked Moses and Aaron to provide that proof, right? He's like, okay, I need proof. Your God's real. Prove this to me. The first couple of times in this scripture that they try to prove that their God is real, the magicians and the scientists of the Egyptian time also make that miracle, quote unquote, happen, right? We all see magic happening we see the magic shows, we see the smoke and mirrors, we see all those types of things happen. Well, they're magicians and they're scientists and they're smart people of Egypt are also able to make these really small miracles happen. And so what that does for Pharaoh is it actually makes him really angry, because he's thinking, well, you're nothing more than my magicians. You're nothing more than my smart people. So all of a sudden, there's this situation between Aaron and Moses and Pharaoh where they're able to explain or able to duplicate the miracles of God, but not in the same way, if that makes sense. They're able to enchant, or they're able to make some magic happen, right? So in this scenario, Pharaoh was not okay with just accepting that God was real. He needed proof. Moses and Aaron are trying to give him proof, but at the same time, Pharaoh's sending his own people out to disprove what they're doing. Now, you all kind of know how this ends, right? So God's like, oh, my miracles aren't big enough for you. All right, check this one out, right? And he starts sending the plagues, plague after plague after plague, until finally Pharaoh's like, hey, this has got to be legit. Like, okay, I'm done. I give up, right? And he lets the people go. And you guys know the rest of the story, and I'm not going to tell you the rest of the story, because I think we all know how Moses escapes Egypt. And if you don't, then you can look it up later, because that's not part of this message. But today I want to bring a couple of friends up. I want to bring Danny and Jared up. So these guys, they understand science. I do not understand science, okay? I am the moderator. So they're going to speak up here, and my goal today is to be the person down here who can say, what'd you say? And allow them to maybe rephrase or put it in simpler terms. So if I don't understand it, then I'll ask the questions, and they can dumb it down for me personally. Okay. So, but what I want us to understand today is what it is about science that makes it so intriguing for people to say, okay, well, like, with a scientific mind, like, I want you to prove to me that God is real, right? Like, a lot of times that's what we see happening with people that really understand science. It's like, you need to prove God to me. So I'm going to ask you guys a few questions today, and I want us to kind of have this discussion about maybe why science is necessary and some of those types of things, okay? So let's start with Danny. All right, so thank you. It was very scientific. I agree. All right, so first question is, has scientific discovery made God unnecessary? It's a heavy question.
Okay, I would say it's completely the opposite. It's made him necessary. And I'll start by, as like a scenario. Suppose you are one of the first human beings that questions how did that universe come to be, why are we here, or all these deep questions. And then you're the first human that comes up with the answer of God. That answer on itself, it's a smart answer. Because before you, there was no such a concept of a God. So you're the one coming up with the concept of, hey, so I'm seeing a bird fly. Who created this bird? And then you're saying, oh, I don't really know the answer, but there must be someone else, like a superior being who created this bird. And I think that on itself, it's a smart answer, because you're coming up with something. You're using reasoning to come up with such an answer. And like nowadays, the knowledge we have, I would say the science and in a part like, for instance, physics, you need a God, or you need someone else that created this. So in my case, I always think of science as a way to explain God. And science for me is just a tool that you can use to understand God a little bit better.
So science is a tool then for you to use to understand God in a deeper level.
I mean, yeah, we use science, to explain the world and to, use it to our, to the things we need and stuff. But in my case, I also use it as a way to understand God or to experience God in a different way.
Do you have an example of that that would be like quick to explain?
Yeah, sure. Well, let's go with creation. So, in physics, there are all these theories, Big Bang, quantum mechanics, whatever, that try to explain how the universe came to be. And, like, I recognize I'm human and I have lots of limits. So I know I'm no one to tell God a way that he did the creation or whatever, because I believe God created the universe. I just want to learn how did he do it. And when I read all these theories, I'm like, wow, this God is a genius. Because, so many things that had to happen in order for us to be here. The Earth had to crash with Jupiter in order for us to have a moon. With no moon, we would not be here. And there are so many things, like, I don't think those are coincidences. So if this God created or made all this happen, all the constants, the numbers that had to be, if he did that, he's just so smart.
So what you're saying is that the chances of it just randomly happening are slim to none, right? And so, like, the idea of a God or someone actually coming and creating something is maybe a more logical...
It's a more rational answer.
Yes. And so, do you know Occam's Razor, right?
Yeah.
So, the theory that the most reasonable explanation is the most likely the correct theory.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I wrote the...
Occam's Razor is a theory that implies the fewest assumptions. So
what you're saying is that, you know, Occam's Razor, which is a scientific theory, right? And so what you're saying is that the path of least resistance in this scenario of creation is that someone actually created that. Okay. So, and I've got an example here for you of Occam's Razor, okay? So Occam's Razor, this is my theory or my example. I failed my test and I want to know why, okay? So theory one is I didn't study enough or have the right material. Theory two is the professor doesn't like me and he counted off from my handwriting. Which one of those two do you think is the most probable scenario for me failing my test? Number one, Roy says number two. Occam's Razor would tell you that you are wrong because that is not the most logical piece. All right, so we're going to go over to Jared. Jared, why do we need spiritual faith when we have scientific knowledge?
Okay, so first distinction would be... to draw a line between faith and blind faith, which we kind of already did that at the beginning of the talk today. But so blind faith is I'm going to heave myself off this cliff and believe that I'm going to fly, and then smashing into the ground and realizing you were wrong all too late. Faith is I've grown up watching people sit on stools. They haven't fallen down, so I'm going to sit on this stool, and I have faith this stool is going to hold me up. So faith is, in a sense, an informed trust. And so the reason I believe that faith is still relevant despite scientific knowledge, I think a good chunk of the Old Testament was actually written for this specific question. If you look at ancient Israel, good example, when they're leaving Egypt, they saw a mountain covered in smoke with a voice booming from on top of it. They saw a pillar of fire. They saw the oceans open up. They saw manna from heaven. They had all the empirical data to prove God that they wanted, but they still grumbled because they didn't trust him. See, in their minds, in that day, all the gods were nature gods. They were literally, going back to the first question, gods that explained what nature does. But what they were dealing with was the god of nature. Not a god that guides something in nature, a particular aspect, but the god who made the entire thing. And they didn't trust him because these other nature gods that they saw the surrounding nations worshiping, including Egypt, were very fickle. They could decide they didn't like you, and, you know, delete you on the spot. But this God was different, and they didn't trust him. They had all the reason to trust him. He could wipe them out in a blink of an eye, and he hadn't, but they didn't have faith. And so without that faith, all the scientific evidence that they had seen firsthand meant absolutely nothing. And the other part of that is, and I might actually get into the other question on this one, a lot of people don't realize this, but philosophically, any scientific theory, requires faith because there are no perfect proofs. Our current science, the way we rationalize it and try to trace stuff back to the source, to the most foundational fact that guides all other facts, that's actually a Greek practice. And several philosophers, including C.S. Lewis, have called out how that's flawed. Because you can go to the very foundation, like, okay, we have atoms, which it goes deeper than that, but I'm going to go only that deep. But we have atoms. This is the foundation, the building blocks. This is so. And the philosopher asks, okay, is this so everywhere? You can't possibly know that. Your data is incomplete, and therefore your proof completely falls through. You have to believe, literally taking on faith, that atoms exist everywhere in the universe, not just the universe we can see. And so there are no absolutes. So to have any scientific grounding, you have to have faith. Fun fact, air conditioning is based off of a theory because we cannot scientifically take it back to a place of absolute proof. And so even though air conditioners clearly work, we have to call it a theory legally because we can't prove that it works. And so, yeah, so science and faith are intertwined. If you're going to have any sort of science, any sort of empirical thinking, you have to base it on, well, I'm just going to assume this is right and go with that. But
so even scientists then have to have faith.
Yeah, you have to have a degree of faith.
So I wrote this quote down. I want you to read it for me.
Unless human reason is valid, no science can be true. C.S. Lewis. Miracles. I just read that book. Awesome.
Yeah, so I think that kind of goes back to what you're saying. You know, there's a flaw in the system because when scientists are looking at a solution or they're looking at something that maybe that's a new discovery for them, they have to have faith that that thing, that whatever it is true. Like, they assume that it is true. They have to go through the proper steps, but they have to have faith that their theory at least has some sort of reasoning behind it. And so unless there's human reason, then no science can be true. So it kind of goes hand in hand, that faith and science. And
yeah. And just so a little more context to this quote, another thing that C.S. Lewis was getting at with this quote is a popular theory in science as to where our personalities come from is determinism, and that is your outside environment gives you experiences that will contribute to your personality. For example, if a dog bites you when you're little, you're going to have an aversion to dogs. You're like, well, that's an aspect of your personality. But what Lewis got at was human reason, actually taking something on faith just because it seems reasonable to do that, cannot come from that device. There's no experience that can give you common sense as to whether or not to take something as or on faith and then base your scientific theory on that. So what he's getting at there is we had to have been taught reason from a source outside of nature as well. And Lewis posited that that was God. I disagree with him slightly, but I won't get into that now.
All right. Thank you, Jared. I'm going back to Danny over here. All right, so Jared kind of touched on this question already, that isn't faith the opposite of reason? And I'll kind of tack this on to this question, but is science in opposition to God?
First question, I would say faith, it's a complement of science or vice versa. We have to understand the concept of complement. So I remember on my math class, we used to see these diagrams where there were two circles and they intersect each other. If you pay attention, that is the concept of complement. But that is just one area where the both circles have things in common. And then there's just the whole big area where they don't have anything in common. So of course, science and faith have things in common, but most of the things won't be shared. So I think you have to understand how they can complement each other. Jay was saying, the whole science is based on axioms. So you actually have to have faith on science, just as with faith. Is science in opposition to God? Well, most people think that, you know, being an atheist is, well, you're smart, you're a scientist. And it's actually, being an atheist is not the scientific take you can have on these this argument? Well, because if you claim you're an atheist, you have no proof to disprove God, and that is not scientific. The most scientific way is to be agnostic. Yeah, you can claim neither. So I would not say science is in opposition to God. Of course, science is looking for the answers, trying to get more evidence that can convince people. But in my opinion, probably the evidence will be of a different kind of the evidence we are used to get on the world.
So what you're saying is that when you think about someone who's a scientist and they say that they're an atheist, which is someone who is devoutly saying, like, there is no God, that's actually, like, not a very scientific thing to do, because they're actually shutting themselves off to potential scientific discovery or possibilities. But when you think about someone who's maybe agnostic, which is someone, they're not going to say that God is real, but they're not necessarily going to say that God isn't real. They're kind of somewhere in the middle. That's probably like the most scientific thing that you can do. But then you also have that evidence that's there. And so as a scientist or as someone who is like a believer, what are a couple of those things that you've seen, like maybe a couple of things that you've seen evidence in?
Well, so I actually watch videos on YouTube of people that really know, you know, PhDs and physics talking about these matters. Many scientists really feel pain when they see that theories like determinism are taking over, because, you know, determinism says that, you know, in a simple way, that things can be predictable. And in a way, determinism is very related to faith and the concept of God. So when you see the evidence and saying that the world is leading on that direction of determinism, many scientists don't like that, because, you know, it's proof of faith in God. Contrary to the theories like, well, quantum mechanics, for instance, that says that everything is random. So you have to look for the evidence. You know, of course, it's not the whole evidence you can get. There should be more of that. But so far, what we have now, it's a good indication that God may be real, and he's real.
So what's maybe one piece of evidence that you personally hold on to as a believer and in someone that's interested in science and faith? So what's like one thing you personally hold on to that you're like, this is the thing to me that says God is real?
Well, I'm a math student, so have some degree of love for things like geometry. And I also love nature. And it turns out that there's a lot of geometry involved in nature. I'll explain, Kerry, the concept of what is this guide? So you see how in nature you can find patterns? So for instance, in a bee, in a flower, you can find certain degree of shapes that you can also relate to the human body. But it turns out that that's explained by an equation. Yeah, so it's crazy because you think, okay, an equation explains the rotation of galaxies and then the migration of birds, and then it's in my forehead. Wow, it's got to be no coincidence.
Say that into a microphone.
Ellen fractals? That's just a fancy way of saying the larger resembles the smaller. Yeah. And you can see it throughout all of nature.
So there's a mathematical formula that says when it comes to geometry in particular that there's, what is this? What are you doing with your hands right now? Are we spiraling down? That's what we're doing.
Yes.
Yes.
They like to represent it as a spiral, a rate of change, and you could actually draw squares based on the spiral, and the squares are uniformly decreasing smaller, and you can relate it to flowers and galaxies and also molecules, atoms.
Everything.
If we can imagine it, the quantum quarks as well. But
we're not going to talk about the quantum quarks. That sounds like something off of a Marvel movie or something. Getting into some Tony Stark stuff right now.
Ish.
Yeah.
A lot of ish.
Okay, so for those of you listening on live on the website, Alfred, who's sitting in the audience, said he likes to envision this formula as like a guy sitting on a recliner watching TV of himself watching TV and so forth and so on.
There's a cool app on App Store. It's called Frax XD. And it's an app where you can zoom, you know, certain formula that is graphed and it goes to infinity. You just keep going and going and repeating itself. It's kind of crazy, but it's cool. That kind of makes more sense of what we're saying.
So there's probably like three people in this room that actually think that app's going to be cool, just so you know. One, two, three. Okay, there we go.
I mean,
Man, I'm good. No, that is fascinating stuff, though. Like, when you think about... So, like, when you think about faith and you think about blind faith and people having blind faith, like, you actually see things in nature and in geometry through using formulas that actually goes back to the Occam's razor, right? Like, it's got to be... There's got to be a reasonable explanation. And the most likely explanation is the simplest explanation, and that's maybe that it all stemmed from the same source, which is why the formula works, right?
And you cannot imagine how many times in math people are trying to look for a answer, commonly the hardest answer. Then when you look back at your work, it's just the easiest.
Yeah.
You just miss the sign, or the easiest thing is that what works.
Yeah,
and my professor used to say that we mathematicians have to be lazy. We have to look for the shortest path to get the answer.
That's good. All right, I'm going to take this back. I'm going to hand this to Jared. All right, one last question. Is science evil?
Man, that's so loaded.
yes, I did that to you.
I'm tempted to say yes just to make something up. But I would say no, science is not evil, but I'm going to explain the connotation whereby a lot of Christians, namely in the United States, think that. Science on its face, and this has, thanks to pop culture, really been smeared, but science on its face is very simple, the pursuit of truth. You're supposed to be impartial in that pursuit. But if you go to the timeline and look at history, you can see a lot of people came up with a very wrong theory because they were very partial. Like, we once thought that flies spawned randomly from dead meat because we wouldn't just sit there and watch, you know, eggs hatch. Like, no, they randomly spawn from horse meat specifically. We just know that. And it's like they already knew the answer, so thanks to being partial, they came up to the wrong conclusion. And science going against God, that's just a rampant version of that. Because if a scientist is being real with you, he doesn't care if God exists. He's just going through the formulas, going through the math, going through the process. He's not even supposed to have a conclusion. I mean, they're supposed to be looking for, I want to know how this works and how this happens, and I'm going to investigate that. I have no idea as to what I'm going to find, but everyone has a bias involved in it. Same thing with God, but if scientists are being true with you, they would absolutely state, belief in God is a philosophical argument. because that's beyond our scope. Science involves the study of nature. And if the God of nature, if God created nature, he is already beyond your scope. You can't test God. If he came before the universe, we can never backtrace something to him because all we know is what we can experience, and that started at some point. So he's already beyond our scope. Well, we can, you know, look for his interference. Well, if he already knows all of time, he's literally, I don't want to go too deep here, but picture a dimension higher where all of time is visible because time is just a direction like length or width. From that vantage point, we would never be able to perceive him because he exists in an axis that we can't turn our head. Good example from Carl Sagan. Love Carl Sagan. Have you ever watched Carl Sagan? He's like, picture a flat land. It's a two-dimensional plane. They have length, they have width, they have no height. And you're looking at them, but they can't see you because they have no height. They can't look up. You could be right here. You can see everything about them, even inside of them, and they can never see you because they're flat. They can't look up. They see this way. They see this way. They can't look up. It's very easy to picture God in the same way, and if that's true, we could never find him. We can't turn our head that direction, literally. And so God's already beyond our scope, so we can't even test him with science. But many scientists have a philosophy against a God, and that's where we Christians come into the connotation of all science is evil and have to throw out all scientific discovery. And that just hurts me because it's all very fascinating and I love to learn. And so in many churches, it's you can't learn because if you learn, you're going to lose your faith. But that is associating three completely different things. Faith is a level of trust from which you can base your reason, no matter what that reason is, be it against God or for God. Science is the pursuit of truth, completely ignoring faith or philosophy or whether God exists. And then philosophy is where you actually decide whether or not there's a God. Now, going back to Danny's question, what do you consider like the greatest proof of God? Philosophically, which that's just breaking things down in your mind is what philosophy is. Our universe, you can see it every day, requires a beginning, a continuation, and an ending. It has to have a beginning. As such, our reality could not have created itself. Why? Because we require beginnings. We can't have a beginning to our beginning. So we had to come from somewhere, some place, sometime, some reality where beginnings are not required. And C.S. Lewis, in his book Miracles, actually gets into this. He's like, well, let's say God created our universe from the level of reality where the angels are. And then above that, there's a level of reality from which he created the angels. But God's like, even if there were other universes before our universe, you have to go back to a point where beginning is not required, and there simply was somebody standing at the top requiring no beginning. And however they exist, it's just them. They simply existed. Philosophically, no matter how far you go back, no matter if you say there's a universe before the universe, you're going to get to a point of there has to be not zero, negative infinity. He just was. So philosophically, if it's not God, there has to be something God-like that created our universe. There's simply no other philosophical explanation. And the only reason anti-God scientist would argue otherwise is because they have a personal reason for not wanting to believe in God, and usually it involves something of, I don't want my behavior to be guided. I don't like having a boss. I don't like having an authority. I like a world where there is no authority and no proper way of doing things. But also, I keep on going back to the book. Thank you for quoting that book. Also, in Miracles, C.S. Lewis noticed that everyone who argued against the existence of God and stated that morality was a complete facsimile and a human fabrication would also, 2 months later, be asking for philanthropy for some sort of cause of how we ought to act. And Lewis would always ask them, where did you get that ought? What empirical evidence tells you what you ought to do? Where are you getting your sense of fair play? And they never have an answer because you can't get that from nature. And he could literally take them back to going to the beginning of, we had to start from someplace not requiring a beginning, and he would catch them in that, and they would usually get very angry with Mr. Lewis, and he enjoyed it immensely. But yeah, I'll quit there.
I think we needed a whiteboard for that one so we could, like, draw it for you. But I think what I got out of that was God has to be limitless, like, time-wise, right? He's got to be infinite and wise and to create everything because we came from somewhere. We had a beginning. Each one of us did. The universe had a beginning, so God has to be infinite. So that's good stuff. All right, so real quick before I let you go, is there, like, maybe one resource that you would suggest to people? Because Carrie had mentioned last week, you know, we're not going to answer all your questions today, but maybe you're interested on a path towards a better understanding of faith or a better understanding through faith and science. Like, is there, like, one resource that you would recommend for anyone to utilize for that? You mentioned an app, which is kind of cool. And we can put all these on Facebook, like the app and stuff, if you want to. Okay, so I have one before as they're thinking. So there's a podcast that I listen to quite frequently. It's called Unbelievable with Justin Briley. And it's basically, he takes someone who's a believer and someone who's not a believer and just has a conversation with them. And so it brings out a lot of really good points a lot of times, just about, you know, different ways of thinking, different ways of you know, the way people perceive the world. And it's always done in respect to one another. So it's not like a sports talk radio where everyone's shouting at each other. It's very well put together and very well organized. But Unbelievable, Justin Briley, it's very interesting stuff. And then he also wrote a book, and I think it's called Why I Believe or something like that. What is Unbelievable? Okay, the name of the book is Unbelievable. That makes sense. With Justin Briley. And it's basically his journey because he's been doing these interviews for so long. It's like, why would I believe after doing 20 years of interviews with agnostics and atheists? Why would I still believe in a God? And it's answering that question, which the book's really fantastic. And if you ever need to borrow it, I have a copy. So.
Okay, I think I have an answer. Naturally, being me, it's going to be duplicitous. If you had to pick one resource and one resource alone, I would recommend, because we're constantly quoting him, the nonfiction works of C.S. Lewis. No matter what book of his, if it's nonfiction, if you pick it up, he's going to touch on quantum physics, evolution, the beginnings of creation, and what I love about it is he will real quickly trim the fat. Like, subjects that you see people get bogged down on Facebook, like they're constantly fighting about it. Lewis is like, oh, well, that doesn't matter, and here's why. Okay, now that we got that silliness out of the way, let's talk about this. It's far more interesting. And you begin to wonder, why did I ever care about that? He, in one sentence, which, you know, a couple of his sentences could be like 500 words, but one sentence, like 10-word sentence, he just cuts it off, and you're like, oh, I'll never worry about that again. Okay. And if I had to recommend a secondary resource, I would also recommend the Bible Project. The Bible Project, they interpret the Bible in the literal, original Hebrew sense, and it gets rid a lot of the Greek and also Western world misinterpretation of their books that has led to scientific arguments that really ought not be there. If you read it as the Hebrews originally did, it's like, oh, that's what they meant because the king at the time was, okay, and you can let it go, and it actually opens up a lot of scientific stuff to you to where you no longer have a problem with it conflicting with your faith. So, yeah, Lewis and Bible Project.
Awesome.
Which we're all about those.
Danny?
I'll go on the simpler path. What I usually do is just scan YouTube and watch videos. I like this channel called PBS Spacetime. They have a series of videos on topics like, you know, quantum mechanics and general relativity and stuff like that. But on their videos, they will sometimes also mention, like in quantum mechanics, for instance, when they explain the Schrodinger equation and stuff like that, they also mention why is there like need of God, and if that could be God, and stuff like that. And they explain on a level that we all can understand. You don't have to be a PhD on physics to understand that. So it's a good way to get like the straight science perspective.
But I understand it.
Yes.
Are you sure?
100%. I understand.
Jared says,
you'd have to go back and watch previous videos for the...
Yeah, yeah.
They do a lot of too lazy, didn't watch versions, but they're like, if you really want to know what I'm talking about, go watch this video. And they have to. But great show.
Yep.
It's like Friends. You got to start at the beginning of the series to understand the later episodes. But you can still laugh at any one just random episode. Yeah, okay. Fun stuff. All right, well, hey, let's give it up for Danny and Jared, y'all.